Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Matty Gladden Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This four-year-aged bourbon is double-pot distilled and non-chill filtered and has a full-bodied mouthfeel with eucalyptus, molasses, clove, ginger, and slight citrus as well as grains of paradise. The finish is long and reappearing on the back of the tongue with notes of pepper, tobacco leaf, and mint cream. All of our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick, respect the grain, please enjoy responsibly, and be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Welcome back to another podcast of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. It's been an exciting September, October, November, and tonight's podcast shouldn't be any different. Tonight, I'm going to be doing what I like to refer to as a tiny talk. I'm by myself every once in a while, and usually I take these opportunities when to podcast by myself. I take this opportunity to come up with a subject matter. Tonight we are going to be going over the process of making whiskey and particularly bourbon, but I'll kind of use my Moonshine University executive bourbon steward training that they've put us through to, you know, do the, you know, come up with a little bit of the differences in the process of making the different whiskeys like Scotch and Irish whiskey, Canadian whiskey, and bourbon. But we got a lot to cover tonight. Sorry about that. We are going to also be tasting two Knob Creeks. One Knob Creek, this Knob Creek right here, this Knob Creek we are going to be tasting. This is from the Explorium Brew Pub. It's 120 proof. This is a 10-year from 10/20/2011 to 4/12/2021. So this is an actual 10-year pick from this particular pub. When I was in Wisconsin at the time, the Milwaukee Bucks were playing and we went to the brew pub and watched them play on television. They went on to win the championship eventually, but this particular pick, they were that night, they were letting you try it. So I picked up a bottle and then I had already done the Kentucky Bourbon Festival pick, which is also, now this one was 11/1/2011. Let me get my reading glasses. Yep, here we go. I think it even gets into the detail. Now this was the pick I did down in Kentucky at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival headquarters. So that's the floor, the fourth floor, the 36th row. So it was from Warehouse Z, fourth floor, 36th row. That was our pick that Freddie had brought along to let Randy Prassi, Steve Coombs, myself, Roxy was there, and then both the Justins. And it was a fantastic, fun time. We went through and got to select from three different, barrels. And this one, had a really nice mid palate creaminess to it that is a little bit different than Knob Creek's normal Knob Creek. So eventually it also was at the time 122.5 percent, you know, it was 122.5 proof, and we knew it was going to be proofed down to 120. So these two, we're going to put them head to head, see how good we truly are compared to, you know, another group that's picking. I don't know if they were picking with Freddie, but Freddie definitely, that was a really cool experience. Now, just remember, we're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. We are on all podcast formats, but whatever podcast format that you're listening to, please go there and subscribe, and also to our podcast channel, and then leave feedback. Feedback is always very important to get feedback, because that gets you into the algorithm, because that tells them that people are listening, not just downloading. So any of those formats, just remember, we also are on Facebook. We have a Facebook group. We would love for you to join, find us. We're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Request, answer some questions, and you're in the group. Now, that group meets here in northeastern northeastern Ohio. We are in Canton, Ohio, in the, you know, in the Canton-Akron range. So we meet every 4 to 6 weeks. And if you decide that you would like to come down and be a part of it, we right now are working on getting, I'm working hard to get a venue, because it's getting a little bit bigger than my house. The first 9 meetings were at my house. This 10th meeting might take place someplace else. But at the meetings, we usually try and get my whiskey stock down. Podcasting, it's kind of hard to drink the amount of whiskey that gets sent you. So I usually share at the meetings. So there's usually a theme. One of the whiskeys that we have, and the different type whiskeys to compare. Like, if so, I think in this next meeting, we are going to compare finished bourbons to straight Kentucky straight bourbons, or just straight bourbons. It could be Indiana straight bourbon, but a straight bourbon. So that, I believe, is going to be our next member. You know, what we're going to be doing at the meeting. And then everybody gets along afterwards, pretty much my collection. If people are just sipping away, that's open for people to, you know, I've got some damn good whiskey. So love to have you guys. The next meeting is going to be December 18th. It's a Saturday night, and I look forward to that. It's on Facebook. On our Facebook page, the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, it's an event, and then also shared to the group. So if you're going to want to attend that, make sure that you go there and say that you're going to attend. So then we're also on Instagram, the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. We're on Twitter at Scotchy, the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. And then also we are on YouTube. We are starting to push that. I'm working on doing a lot of editing. Hopefully get a couple more videos up real soon. It's that one part of getting videos up on YouTube. That's just finding the time in the day to be able to keep editing. It's like if you do an hour and 30 minute podcast that you're going to put up on YouTube, usually I got to go through everything, make sure everything's going good, but then also put all the sponsorship in and everything. So the editing, if anybody out there has experience in editing and wants to help out, let me know. That would be great, because at this point, the editing for YouTube is taking the part that is taking this to another level. That with a full-time job, I can handle the podcasting, uploading the podcasting. I can handle all the camera work, getting all the video and everything, but the editing's been pretty rough. So if anybody's out there and wants to help out in this Ohio community in Canton, or North Canton, Akron, anywhere, I would greatly appreciate the help. But with that said, we also, I'm missing a couple of your Twitter. Oh, we're also on through LinkedIn. So we're pretty much on all the social media platforms. But oh yeah, www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Check out our website. Yes. And then in the if you go there, you can find bios. There's a store. You can pick up everything. And then in your top right-hand corner is the Patreon button. And we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys on Patreon. It's a great way to help us, you go there and support us. There's many different things. We have our Scotchy Bourbon Boy, Glen Karen. These are awesome. They're available for part of the subscription. There's also the Scotchy Bourbon Boys t-shirt. There's Scotchy Bourbon Boys. We just have, tastings available, all different levels to support us. So please feel free to go to that Patreon, the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and support us there. So that covers that. Now, we've had on Facebook, we had a couple different, we've had four new members. And so I might as well say it was Brianna Tedson, Bourbon Battalion, Angela Lamil Eshleman, and Chad Huffsutler. I'm so bad at names. I shouldn't even be doing this anymore, but I just like to recognize most people. If I butchered your name, mentioned something on Facebook, that's fine too. But it will welcome to the new members. Please, keep coming. We're over 650 members. I never thought it would be this big. And it's been pretty cool so far with that. Now that brings me to, this weekend, I'm headed down to Indiana, and Alan Bishop is shooting a documentary, and he's shooting that with Bo Cumberland, and myself, hopefully Super Nash and Xavier are going to be going down to Indiana and hopefully having an absolute awesome blast. So we're hoping we're going to be driving down. It starts at 10 o'clock, get there at about 9:30. And it is a documentary on a lot of, on distilling. And as Bo Cumberland put it, he said it's going to be the Tiger King documentary of bourbon. So this should be, or distilling, the Tiger King documentary of distilling. Because I just can't wait to find out what's actually, the whole aspect of it. It sounds like it's going to be an absolute blast. So with that, going down there and going to go through the process of distilling, let's talk about, what it takes to make whiskey. So the first thing you need is whiskey's made of cereal grains. So you're talking any of the grains. There can be different grains, but the main grains of cereal grains is barley, wheat, rye. And those, the wheat, barley, wheat, and rye and corn. Those are the four main grains that are usually used in making, whiskey. But rice can be used. So it just comes down to, it's got to be a grain for it to be whiskey. So I also know that they've used, the grain of the gods. I think it's amaranth. And then, they've used kasha. There's buckwheat. I mean, there's all different grains that you can use to make whiskey. but it's got to be that, you know, it's got to be a grain. So then in each for making whiskey throughout history, barley and malted barley, you know, malted barley, the reason why they malt it is because it exposes the enzyme. It increases the amount of enzymes that get put into the mash and the fermenting process to allow the yeast that you're using to convert the sugar to alcohol in a very efficient and non-toxic way. So when, so the malt is very important in the whiskey making process. It's usually a lower percentage. Malted barley is a lower percentage, but you can do a lot of different things with the malted barley. You could toast it, and then how you can roast it or fire it so that it becomes like a chocolate malt. There's all different types of process. What happens to the malt in Scotch is when they're malting the barley, they blow peat over it, and that will create a smoky flavor. So there's a lot of different things that can happen to the malt, but the malt's very important for the enzymes that it produces so that the fermenting process becomes more, what would you say, not efficient, but those enzymes are needed for the yeast to be very, to be more productive. That's the word I was looking for. So that's the malt part of it. In the mash, that's when you cook to make the mash. You take the grains that you're using. You take the malt, the corn, the wheat or the rye, or wheat and rye, depending on what you want, and you cook it. And then you cook it to a level, and then you cool it. And once it's cooled, you put it into the fermentation tanks. And that's where you add yeast. And it basically takes the sugars of the grains that you've just opened up and made into a mash, and it starts to ferment it. It basically, the food for yeast is sugar. So you want to have the right amount of sugar in there so that the yeast is productive, but there are, you know, it's a balance when you're doing the mashing process and then the fermenting process, because so the mash process is the grains are added to warm water to begin the extraction of. So what happens is this is what the enzymes do to the sugar. So the sugar chains are 12 and are longer than the, I believe the chain should be 3 and under for the yeast to convert the sugar to alcohol. But when you put them all together in the mash and you warm it up before you add the barley, the malted barley, the sugar chains can be 12, 14, they're longer. And what the enzymes of the malted barley do is when you add them in. Now you can add those enzymes in without using barley, and some distilleries are doing that, but the normal way to do it is to add the malted barley, and that those enzymes break those sugar chains down to convertible sugar for the yeast to turn it to alcohol. So there we go. That's what I was looking. So that happens in the mashing process. Then when you go to the fermenting process, you know, there it's in the mashing tub. Once it's done in the mashing tub, it goes into the fermenting tub, the fermentation. This is where The alcohol turns the sugar into yeast. It can take 48 hours. I know some places where it takes up to 72 hours. But what that does is once the alcohol is done converting all the sugar to yeast, all the sugar to alcohol, once the yeast has turned all the sugar to alcohol, that is called the brewer's beer. That's what it is. It's a beer. And so it's called brewer's beer. And then that brewer's beer is ready for the distillation process. So all the grain that was in the process has dropped down, and then you're left with the liquid that's sorted, and then the liquid is then sent to the still. Now, different countries can have different distillation methods. For example, Scotland will distill the wash twice, whereas Ireland will distill the wash three times. The stills utilized for the distillations are made in copper, and generally they work in pairs and are heated traditionally with coal, but modern distilleries might use gas or steam for whiskey. Distillers will use alcohol from the middle of the distillation, also called the heart. So you've got the front part of it, the distillation process, which you've got, it's unbelievable. So the hearts, oh my God, I should be kicking myself. I can't believe that's not coming to me. And let's see. The front of the distillate, just hang in there with me, folks, because this is gonna, I know the feints, here we go. I took the course. It's basically a block, which, it's not even going to help me with that. Come on, let's get back to it. I'll get back to it. It is the front part. All right. Hold on, folks. I've got books on this, and I'm not going to let that go because it's bothering me that I have to have this brain. All right, I'm back. I'll put my headphones back on. But I've got this, and I'm not going to let that go because it's ridiculous that this is what happens when you've had COVID, and now I can't even set this down. All right, put this back on. All right, let me turn my chair properly. I've got my Stave and Thief hardcover book. Here we go. All right, crotch. I can't believe it. You soil bourbon. No, that's just crazy that I'm having this much problems. I'm almost embarrassed that I can't. It should just be popping into my head. Shouldn't it? Don't you think? The end is called the tails. That just popped into my head. We are getting certified. Let's try it again. The feints, the hearts, and the tails. But I'm going to... This doesn't even have it in there. Terms. how much more do I do before milling, fermenting, distilling? All right. They're not even going to put it up there, are they? Beer, cognogens, enzymes, mash, starch, yeast, it's all there. But what I'm looking for, the front of the line. And, you know, it's so funny because you all are out there yelling at me what it is, and we're going to leave it alone. There's three. There's the front end, there's the hearts, and then there's the tails. Now, in that process of... Oh, my God. I just can't believe. Maybe I wrote it down here. Pot still, cola. We were talking about the congens in the different part. Created when... 50%... Nothing. Street. It's driving me nuts. Anyways, in those, at the start of the run, you're going to get a lot of the alcohol that is not good for you. There's not a lot of taste. And when you get to the end of the start of that run, there's a little bit of taste that can be picked up that you can include in your hearts. And then when you get into the tails also, that's the end of the run. And a lot of people will take those tails and then put them back in for their next run. And that is, part of the process of the distillation. Once that's finished and you pull the hearts off, you can put it into the doubler and then do the same thing, taking out the bad toxins and flavors, bitter flavors that can exist. Now, in a pot still, which you can use, which a lot of... distillers can use. There's the pot still and a column still. The pot still is you run a batch, and when you're done, it's over. You clean it out and get ready to run your next batch. You could take the tails from there, and you have a little bit more control. Now, a column still is continuous distillation. Now, they do and are able to remove some of the cognogens that are in the flavors and whatever that are in the whiskey, but it's not as easy. And there's more that get in than what you can do and control with a pot still. A lot of times pot stills have a little bit more, different type flavor than the classic Kentucky bourbon caramel vanilla that goes on when you're stilling. But that the last part now of the process is maturation. So once you're done in distill, you're going to put that into a barrel. Now, to make bourbon, it has to be a new white oak charred barrel. But to make other whiskeys, such as Canadian, Scotch, and Irish, it doesn't have to be. They can use used barrels. So a lot of them use bourbon barrels, actually. There's a lot of scotches that use bourbon barrels because they can only use those barrels once for bourbon, but they can use it up to three times for scotch. So those are the kind of things. But once it's in the barrel, now there's a lot of flavor, a lot of different things. What type of oak? Bourbon is white oak, but what kind of type of wood that you're aging in? How long you age it? 3, 4, 5, 6, 25 years. I mean, that all affects flavor. Now, one of the things, if you pot still, you can age it in a different way because you're not as concerned about the wood taking out some of the impurities that were left when you do a column still. So you can age it in a different way using a pot still, which then tends to get a flavor profile that is a little bit more grain forward and that type of thing. Whereas that's not going to happen with some of the classic bourbons where you're getting caramel, vanilla, cherry. You're really getting the wood flavors into the whiskey instead of the actual flavors from the distillate. So there's a lot of different things, but that pretty much covers it. And then once it's matured, comes back in, gets bottled, and labeled. The labels are very important. When you read a label, look up how, you know, there's a lot of different places, but the label tells you what you need to know. So we'll learn how to read a label. That's a whole different podcast, but what it tells you, the distillery, there's so many different ways people make whiskey. There's places that grow the grain. They don't distill, but then they get it back in age. I mean, there's just some people just blend, where they're just buying barrels from people and blending and making their own whiskey. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but the label pretty much tells you what they've done. So we'll cover that at a different time. If you have any questions on the distilling process or any questions for me, please just leave it on the Facebook group, or you can email me at thescotchybourbonboys@gmail.com, and I'll try to answer those questions here on the podcast. So that brings me to this tasting. And I'm excited because being a part, if you get a chance to be a part of a barrel pick, they're just a blast. A bunch of everybody getting around drinking whiskey that was pulled from the barrel or being pulled from the barrel by you, and then picking the best one that you can that eventually is going to be bottled, and you're going to have something that you participated in. So that's really kind of a cool thing, in my honest opinion. It's, after the my barrel pick was the first one that that I ever was on, was this one. And I'm kind of proud of it. So once again, this was from, let's see, I'll try and do this again. Warehouse. Oh, come on. Here we go. Cause this is small and I definitely need, this, but this one comes from Warehouse Z, Floor 4, and Row 36. So that's really kind of a cool thing that's happening there. This was hand selected by out of the warehouse by Freddie. Now this one, they're both 10 years. This one was 10/20. That was November 2011. And then this one was done 4/12. And we picked this March 31st. So they're almost identical. They were down April 12th and I was there March 31st. So I'm going to open up this one. Here we go. So this all is about, these selections are all about the maturing process, where they matured in the warehouse. Now that we went over, that was kind of cool. This is Warehouse Z. Okay. So both these came from Warehouse Z, the fourth floor, which is very unique. This is going to be really kind of cool to tell the difference. But this one was the 74th row, where that one was the 36th row. So I'm pouring the 70. So we're pretty much 10. This was bottled 10/20/2011. Barreled. And this barrel was filled 11/1/2020. So 9 days, October 30th, 10 days later. So 12 days later. So this is 12 days later from the same warehouse, and on the fourth floor, and this is from row 36, and that's from row 74. We are talking about close to each other. So I'm going to put that one there. Now, that's very kind of cool that I'm smelling the whiskey from a distance, because I've really had to work hard to get my taste buds and my nose working. I'm jump starting it. So it's really, the difference should be, I don't know, it should be nothing. So let's start it off with the pick out of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin bar. A lot of caramel. Let's get these off. A nuttiness. And initially I smelled it from a distance. Let's see. And that's been the hardest challenge coming back into this, is my nose. Now I'm going to smell mine. This one has a richer, candier caramel. This one has a little bit of a sour bread kind of note. All right, let's compare. So if I was going to give these two noses, let's just shock my palate with the one from Wisconsin. Wow. I haven't done that in a while. That was just, took my breath away from, and brought tears to my eyes from, straight up the fumes. Oh, that was interesting. Whoa. The taste was fantastic. Tons of caramel, vanilla. Not getting the normal Knob Creek profile. Very good. This pick is fantastic. Cherry, vanilla. What's really nice with this is on the finish, I'm getting a good amount of sweetness. All right, that's pretty good. That one's pretty good. That's a nice pick off that. All right, I'm picking up a ton of caramel, vanilla. And a little bit, it might be that I have the cherry already on my mouth. A lot of vanilla now. Straight up. Oh, what is that? Oh, a Brock's vanilla. Wow. Oh. Oh. Nice. I'm happy. That's crazy. These two are very similar, but not similar. And I'll explain. The Wisconsin pick, I'll call it. We got a Wisconsin and the Kentucky. The Wisconsin pick is forward on the... cherry, vanilla. Wow. So this one is forward on the front of the tongue to mid palate. Then it picks up some wood. It's a 10-year-old bourbon on both cases. And the hug is nice on that one. But there's a little bit of bitterness on the finish, not a lot. Where, let's try this with the Knob Creek from Kentucky. That's an unbelievable finish. It's going still. And it's vanilla. Sweetness. So the strong point of... This is rough. Let's just try this again. Putting these two together and knowing one was put into the warehouse, into the barrel on 10/20/2011. The other one that we were dealing with was November 1st, 2011. Then 2021 comes around 10 years later, almost 10 years, nine years and whatever. And then this one's from 4/12. And this one is 3/31, a month. So they're within, they're getting pulled out of the, that one went in a week earlier and came out a week later. And they basically were in the same row, just not, they were in the same floor, four, but one was further down the floor than the other. And it's so unique because what's happening in your mouth, if you put the two of them together, you'd have this unfreaking believable explosion of flavor on the front and the back everywhere. It would be like one of the best bourbons, but we're going to do it one more time. Vanilla caramel. And the finish is a sweet oak. This one, let's go for front. All right. The only way to settle this is to barrel bash it. And I'm going to barrel bash. So now I'm going to nose them first. Vanilla and cherry. Vanilla caramel. All right. I would have to give both these a 3 on the nose. Now, the body at 120 in the glass, both of them hold on to that rim. Let's look at color. Exact same color. It's, if I grab, let's see. If I grab my, here we go. My whiskey rating tasting journal. I'm going to put this down. I'll write these in. Let's get down to, we've done a lot. All right, product name, Knob Creek, bourbon, 9 years, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 months, and proof 120 on both. Date, it was a $56 bottle. Date sampled, what is today? 11/8/21. Jim Beam Distiller. Kentucky. Notes. All right. Nose, palate, finish. But I would say this is an amber color. They both are amber. All right. All right. The nose, I gave a 3 and a 3. The body, we got to check that one more. The body's a 3. It's pretty big. It just doesn't coat the whole mouth. Let's see about this. It's a 3 on the body. Now, the palate. Sweet up front. I got to give the palate a 3 too on both, but yep. I like mine a little bit better because we're dealing with caramel. Why do I have to scribble? All right. 3 and 3. But the finish is the difference. The finish on the Wisconsin one, I'm going to go with 2 because it gives me too much of a oak finish, which gives it 11 out of 14. I mean, out of 16. And on the Kentucky, I'm going to barrel bash that finish as a 4 with a but up up. Now, our barrel bashing rating system is nose, body, palate, finish. Each category has 4, but you're allowed one category if it's exceptional. And the finish on this Knob Creek that we picked for Kentucky Bourbon Festival, it is exceptional, and you can give it a butt up up. If you listen to our podcast, you'll understand where the butt up up came from. It evolved through many different processes, but that butt up up is for something spectacular, and the finish on this one is spectacular. So I give it a 4 with a butt up up. Butt up up. So a total of 5 on that finish. So that took that 11 and 14 out of 16. So definitely I'm not ripping at all. 11 out of 16 for a barrel pick. Single barrels are so phenomenal. They make something that's a small batch, and you take one barrel, it usually blows away the small batch. And that's one I'm going to do coming up on the next Tiny Talk. I will be barrel bashing the Knob Creek, Kentucky, up against a 9-year small batch and see where we go. But it's not even a, what would you say? It's not even a contest when you put a single barrel up against a small batch, because small batch is going for consistency and taste for people who want to drink Knob Creek consistently and get the same thing, where a single barrel has nothing to do with consistency. They're all different. This one, they're close, but what sets the, and honestly, folks, when we were picking this at the when we were doing the pick, the finish was not what this finish is in the bottle. So it's like once they put it in the bottle, proofed it down from 122.5 down to 120, and then it's been sitting here. And I just opened the single barrel from Wisconsin just tonight. So it's technically a neck pour, whereas the Knob Creek from the Kentucky Bourbon Festival, I bought 2 bottles. One I'm going to have Freddie sign, and then this one that I wanted to enjoy because I knew it, I enjoyed it. I want to be able to drink it, so I picked up 2 bottles. So this one, cheers to everything Knob Creek. And just remember, we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Now, I've completely on this podcast, and I have time, so I've completely and totally ignored our sponsors. So I'm going to do, you heard Alan Bishop. I'm going to be going down with Alan Bishop, shooting that, shooting that documentary, looking forward to it. He is the spirit of French Lick. And you heard him at the start talking about Matty Gladden, Bottled in Bond. It's some delicious bourbon. They've come out with a lot of different stuff. William Dalton, I can't wait to get down there. I think he's got a bottle that down there for me of that. But let's get the... We also have Logstill Distillery as one of our sponsors. And let's just do this. Our humble beginnings trace back to 1836 when our forefather used an old hollowed out popular log to fashion a still. Kentucky bourbon has flowed through our family veins ever since. Today, we pay homage to our family legacy with Dant Crossing, a 300-acre destination in Gethsemane, Kentucky that is anchored by Logstill Distillery, home to our Monk's Road Premium Bourbon and Gins. Dant Crossing is just an hour away from Lexington and Louisville and just over 2 hours from Nashville. Spearheaded by J.W. Wally Dant III and cousins Lynn and Charles, family is at the heart of everything we do. Remember, for tours and tastings and amphitheater schedule, go to logstilldistillery.com and drink responsibly. So there we go for that. Now, Wally, Lynn, and Charles are excellent people. Got to see them down at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. It was a great time had by all, and wonderful, wonderful people. Wally is about as real of a person as you get. He just makes everybody that he talks to feel like he's just another, and he is. He's just another guy doing something special. I mean, we were down there, and the distillery, the main distillery, was probably about 30% up. Their main offices probably were at 75%, but their tasting room was open. Their amphitheater was open. They're going to have some fantastic stuff, an event center, wedding, you know, they're set up for weddings. They're going to have a restaurant. They're going to have the railroad, the Kentucky Railroad, running right through there and offering stays on presidential railroad cars. So what they got going on down there is just amazing. If you get a chance to get down there in that area, make sure you check out the Logstill Distillery. So now we get to our other sponsor, Aaron Harris, Ann Dimmick, and Greg Lehman are just awesome people at the Watershed Distillery. The Watershed Distillery is Ohio's largest distillery. They produce Watershed bourbon, but what they've been doing, they're bottled in bond. They're 6-year cast strength apple brandy finished, you know, barrel finished bourbon. It's just amazing. They're single barrels that happen at their you could pick up at their gift shop. They're fantastic. The bourbon that they're producing and the whiskey they're producing down there has upped its game ever since, you know, in my opinion. Greg set the foundation and then had the whereabouts to hire Ann Dimmick and Aaron Harris, and what they're doing now is upping their game, and they're right there with everybody else. So fantastic spirits down there. So here we go. It's going to be a distance read, but let's see what happens. Watershed Distillery is Watershed Distillery is Ohio's largest craft distillery and producer of the number one selling Ohio-made bourbon in the world. Open 7 days a week for tours and tastings, and home to Watershed Kitchen and Bar, one of the three top restaurants in Columbus. Watershed Distillery is a perfect destination for great bourbon, exceptional food, and amazing craft cocktails. Learn more and book your tour at watersheddistillery.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and always drink responsibly. Cheers, everybody. So that covers that part. I got it in. Our sponsors are in. I don't know how I didn't just mix that in, but shout out to Freddie No and Sandy No. When we were down at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival, we went to the Jim Beam dinner, got to say hello. Everybody knows that Bourbon Queen, Sandy No, she's check out her podcast in season, I believe it was the start of season two. So check that out. She was wonderful. We were in the Jim Beam Man Cave and just had a great time. So with that said, I think I've covered everything. So let's let Mr. Morrison take us away. Boom. And remember, everyone, good bourbon equals good friends and good times. And get the hell out there and live dangerously. Good night, everybody. Yeah.